Support comes from the Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud partner of the public broadcasting stations that keep Coloradans better informed.
Support comes from Vivint Health, providing integrated medical, dental, and mental health clinics, pharmacy, and social services for all people affected by HIV. They strive to assure that everyone with HIV has the opportunity to thrive. More at vivinthealth.org.
Good evening and welcome to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Yvonne Crumry, and for tonight's show, I've interviewed Jose Ramon Garcia Madrid, out Boulder County Census Outreach Partner. I asked Jose the questions that I've had about the census and how it impacts LGBTQ+ communities as well as other marginalized groups. If you want to know more about the census, feel free to email Jose at jgarcia-madrid@outboulder.org. So thank you so much for joining me today. To start, may I ask you to introduce yourself and give us an idea of what you're doing with OutBoulder to influence the census process?
Sure, yeah. So I am Jose Garcia Madrid. I am a law student here in Boulder, and I moved to Boulder in last August. I'm working with OutBoulder County as a census outreach partner. And so the census hires people from communities that are traditionally hard to count in the census. So immigrant communities, communities of color, and I'm specifically working with LGBTQ communities to make sure that the people in Boulder who are queer understand what the census is and why it's so critical that our community in particular takes it.
So I guess going off that note, like, what does make the census so important?
So the census is pretty simple. Like, what they're trying to do is just count as many people as possible. And so what the Census Bureau does sounds very easy, right? Just maybe not easy, but it's just a simple, we can all understand that they just want to count. What happens after the count, though, is the most important part. So after the census figures out how many people belong to any specific county or city or state, that then decides a slew of just sort of like consequential actions from that. And so anything from funding, food stamps, funding, sort of affordable housing projects, anything that the government is going to give money to Boulder County for, they're going to sort of attach it to or make it sort of commensurate with how many people live in Boulder County. So if we're asking the federal government for money for a project that we want to benefit LGBTQ people, it's likely that they'll sort of give us funding based off how many people filled up the census.
Okay, beautiful. Yeah, I think I had an awareness that it influences potential like political numbers. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that it helps with some social services as well. So to clarify, does that mean that if we find out there are more people in Boulder County that use or would benefit from food stamps, does Boulder County now have like a greater maximum of how they can hand out food stamps?
Yeah. So if you think about sort of the food stamp is a great sort of model to look to, because there's finite resources, finite money in almost anything that the federal government does, right? And so they're going to allocate more money to places that have more people. So if we could get more people counted in Boulder, that means we will get more money.
That makes sense. I guess, yeah, I hadn't had much awareness of the fact that there is already a cap and you're hoping to like push up that cap for each person so there's more resources available. And I know one thing that has been a big topic with this round of census is that the application questions have changed. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to that and how it impacts our communities?
Yeah, no. So our communities are always sort of uniquely impacted by the questions that the census asks. It's been sort of a historical struggle for us to make sure that the questions asked in the census sort of accommodate the diversity amongst queer communities. And so this year, I'll go back a little bit. In 2010, there was a big push to change the census so that people who are in non-hetero relationships could identify that in the census. So when you fill out the census in 2010 and you said, I'm living with person B, and it would say, what's your relationship to that person? It wouldn't give you an option to say, this person is my, quote, same-sex partner. It was just like roommate, partner of a different sex and things like that. So this year, you can identify somebody who you live with as a same-sex partner. So that's a win for people who are in same-sex relationships. It's not a win for people who identify as trans or gender non-conforming or non-binary, because even if we're able to identify, I live with somebody in a non-hetero relationship, you can't sort of go further and say, and we're both non-binary and we're both trans, or one of us is GNC. So there's definitely more to do. But I think when you look at the last census to this census, it proves that LGBTQ people speaking up and sort of demanding more is working, and we need to keep doing that.
That is helpful in understanding that. So it's more about like your relationship with people you're living with, but little information is taken about your identity in regards to LGBT issues.
So that was the example with the sort of who you live with question. The other question that's sort of the bigger question for queer people is when they ask you for your sex. So it's one of the first questions that they're going to ask you is what is your sex? And they just say male or female. There's no opportunity to select a text box where you write in something that's not that. This kind of, you have to choose either male or female. And so that's when, specifically without Boulder, people have been emailing us, commenting on our posts and saying, I want to fill it out, but I also don't want to sort of, I don't want to like compromise who I am for the census.
And so with those people who are asking these questions, what is your advice if like to still participate in the census and still get those resources with these barriers?
So sort of the first thing that is sort of out Boulder, we were hearing people come to us with this concern. The first thing that was important for us to do is just say like, yes, like that sucks. And that's not something that should happen. And so we definitely hear it. We affirm those concerns and we validate them. They're super important. And I think that queer people in general just have different experiences with filling out forms. It can be triggering for a lot of people. Many people struggle with getting birth certificates changed, identity documents changed. And so the census can maybe bring some of that up. But what we're saying to people is, one, the census is asking us to self-identify. So what that means is that, say I, so for example, identify as gender nonconforming, I can select male because that's what I feel is closest to how I live my life. It's not authentic to who I am, but as far as within the limits of the census, it's what's closest. The census is not going to come to my house. They're not going to call me. They're not going to say, hey, we noticed you checked A or B, like give us more information. So they're going to respect how people identify. So that's number one. The second one, which I think is maybe a little bit more complicated, is to say, even though we have to fill out the census in a very limited way, it's we have to look at the bigger picture, which is getting money to Boulder County, so that then we can say, hey, Boulder County government or municipality, we fill out the census to get our money. And so now we're going to demand that you fund our projects and our initiatives. So for queer people, it's sort of, we have to look at the bigger picture within the limits of the census.
So that was one example of why people might be kind of adverse to filling out the census. What are some other reasons that we find hesitancy in the community, whether it be LGBT or in undocumented communities? Like, what is the reason why people might not be interested in filling a census out?
So I think the biggest thing that a lot of us are aware of with this 2020 census is we've been hearing a lot about this citizenship question. And so the current administration was sort of pushing for the census to include a question about whether or not you're a citizen. So that question is not on the census. The census is not asking people about their citizenship status. So that still gives people some pause, though, because you heard it on the news, you heard the president talking about it, and people are thinking, like, this, I don't even want to look at the census because I don't want to engage with that question. That's also fundamentally a question about confidentiality, and so whether you are concerned about citizenship status, about disclosing to the government that you're queer or live in a household with somebody who is queer, whatever the issue is that you don't want to share with the government, there are underlying concerns about confidentiality.
That was one question I was going to bring up, is like how to balance the fear of data collection and the kind of distrust that we have with the people who are doing the data collecting with that need to get more resources and to be represented.
So the cool thing about the census is, so regardless of who is president, the census is sort of its standalone agency. And so the census is able to do things like institute rules for the census that say, we will not release anybody's identifying information for 72 years. So if we fill out the census right now, nobody's going to see our name. They won't see how we answered the gender question, or they won't see who we live with. That will all remain confidential for 72 years. The idea being that people who take the census today will likely be no longer with us in 72 years. So it sort of protects us while we are on Earth, and then later sort of releases that information.
Okay, thank you. So to clarify, does that data get used more generally? It's just that you can't link it to a person for 72 years.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So it's kind of just used for counting, and then 72 years they can figure out like the more like social data points.
Okay, right on. So yeah, so in the now time. So in the moment after the census data is collected, they could release a report next year saying like Boulder County had this many people who have same-sex partners, but they won't be releasing how it's related to individuals.
Yeah, you won't know who those people are, where they live, or any of that.
So a few more groups of people that I was curious about, I've been seeing some language about how the census is different for different groups of people and how to kind of tackle the differences. I was curious about people in rural areas. Is it super difficult to get the census taken in those areas? Is it easier? I was curious what you knew about that, seeing as Boulder County itself can be a pretty rural space.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it is something that we're working on with the county, as well as with a larger census sort of bureau who's in Boulder County helping us out. There are definitely concerns about sort of reaching the rural communities. They're definitely a part of the hard to count populations that I talked about earlier. The sort of, I'm not even sure to say like the positive, but something good to maybe come out of the fact that we're all now online is that more resources can be put to intentionally reach rural communities. That maybe before, when we were focusing on like knocking on people's doors, that wouldn't necessarily happen in like every rural community. But now the census is quickly adapting to COVID-19. And so all of their outreach efforts are going to be online. And I think that might facilitate sort of reaching rural communities better, right? So if we have the census focusing more on internet outreach, then it's kind of more, there's more equity in that.
You're listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm Yvonne, and I've been speaking with Out Boulder County Census Outreach Partner, Jose Ramon Garcia Madrid, and he has been helping me to dispel some of the myths about the dangers of taking the census for marginalized people. Something that I don't have a great understanding of: how does the census count people who are houseless, who don't necessarily live at a residential address?
So one thing that the census does to count people who either are houseless or don't live in traditional sort of homes or apartments is they work with shelters and different sort of communities of people to identify like one person who's going to be able to do the count. And so, for example, for people who live in college dorms, they're not asking every one of those students to fill out the census. They're going to the university and saying, hey, how many dorms do you have? Give us. So the university kind of does their own mini census and then sends it to the census. Similar to homeless shelters, they'll do the same thing. So they'll say like, give us a count of who is, how many people are there. And then they incorporate that into the census. So they're not, even though people who are houseless may not be directly interacting with the census, if they are spending any time in some kind of shelter, the idea is that the people who run the shelter will capture their count.
Mm, okay. And it would be in the shelter's best interest too to correctly represent the data to hopefully push for more resources.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's unlikely that it would be misidentified. Okay, awesome. Thank you. In the same vein is, you might have already answered this with your last question, but incarcerated individuals or people who are otherwise detained at ICE centers, ICE detention centers, or incarcerated centers, are those people that will be accurately counted in the census to the best of your knowledge?
So to the best of my knowledge, I'm not sure about people who are in ICE detention centers. With people who are incarcerated in non-ICE detention centers, so like criminal jails, the criminal justice system. So those people will definitely be counted. It's sort of similar, right? The jail will sort of give a population count to the census. But that's an interesting point about people who are in ICE detention, I'm not sure.
So can you give examples in the past of other ways where the census has like changed broader understanding of what's needed in an area that you can think of, like your favorite census stories?
So that's a great question, because I think something that I've been sort of struggling with in outreach is, so the census kind of is not a sexy topic, right? Like people don't necessarily have like fun census stories, or like even people who I'll talk to now about filling out the census, they're like, I don't think I've ever filled it out. And then that's kind of it. So the hard part is sort of digging those stories and those like narratives from people about how the census might have impacted their lives. I think, like we were talking about earlier, learning from people who were really organizing around 2010 to get the census to change the partner question, and hearing from them now and how energized they are about taking the census, is something that I'm really excited about. And I think that it's something that we can learn from, because the people who were sort of doing that organizing in 2010 are a lot older than younger organizers now, who are sort of raising flags about the question on gender, the question on sex, as the census decided to write it. So even though there are a lot of areas of improvement to making sure that queer people are seen by the census and are adequately counted by the census, we can look to our sort of predecessors who've done the work for us already and shown that the census is at least one agency that's willing to work with us.
Yeah, I think that your reassurance that the census is separate from whatever partisan control that the administration or Congress has is a big reassurance, because I wonder how much that might put people at ease to know that the census is still being monitored and created by people who like have a dedication to this specific thing.
One of the sort of cooler conversations I've had is, so there's somebody who works for the Census Bureau. Her name is Julie Frater. I believe that's her last name. Her first name is definitely Julie. I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name. But so anyway, Julie and I were sort of just like at a census event. And after the event, we were talking and she was saying, Jose, you know, one of the best things about the Census Bureau is that this is one of the most diverse groups of people I've ever worked with in my life. And so she was talking about how there were people from different countries, different languages, different communities, different orientations, different gender identities coming together to really make sure that the census is able to reach as many people as possible. The cool sort of like point about the census is that they have a goal to reach close to like 99% of the population in the U.S. So they want to be able to touch and contact close to 300 million people. You can't do that if everybody who works for you looks the same, speaks one language, only has one sort of experience. So I think the census does a really good job of understanding if we want to reach rural communities, rural immigrant communities, undocumented communities, queer communities, we need those people we need to hire those communities in order to get some advice on how to reach. And so I think the census, with hiring like census outreach partners for queer communities like me, immigrant communities, and like I was saying earlier, is really showing a lot of organizations how to do the work, which is pay people to do the work and not just like Google Translate things.
That's super exciting. And so anyone who might be listening to the show and is interested in like taking on the census right now, what do they do?
So they log on to 2020census.gov and then they fill out the census. So by now, most people should have received some kind of postcard by the census, a letter from the census that say, hey, the census is live. Here's a code for you to enter on 2020census.gov, which will then let the website know you're filling it out for your address. If you didn't get that code from the census, you're good. You're able to fill it out. Your code will just be your address. So it still works out.
I think that's all the questions I have. Is there anything else you think you'd like me to ask or you'd want people to know?
So the only thing would be to say, like, please take the census. It's so critical that we take the census. There are estimates that say that for each person who takes the census, that will give back about $2,000 a year for the next 10 years for their communities. So if you take the census now, in 10 years, you will have given your community of Boulder County, $20,000. So you multiply that by as many people as live in Boulder County. That's huge, right? And so even though it might not feel immediate right now, you will see it and you will be able to touch the consequences of you taking the census through the programs that organizations like Out Boulder is able to put on, through the resources that the County of Boulder gives to our communities, to the ways that our government is structured, right? The census also has to do with how many people we're able to elect into Congress. And so there, right now, it's not immediately visible, but it will definitely be tangible for all of us over the next 10 years.
Right on. Thank you so much, Jose. Thank you for listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm Yvonne Crumry, and I've been speaking with Out Boulder County's Census Outreach Partner, Jose Ramon Garcia Madrid. Jose has been helping dispel some of the myths about taking the census as a member of the LGBT community, and we've been discussing some of the ways that questions on the census eliminate possibilities for collecting data on our communities as well as other communities. If you have any further questions about the census, feel free to email Jose at jgarcia-madrid@outboulder.org. For recordings of tonight's show and past shows, please go to news.kgnu.org/outsources. And if you have any questions or concerns, email us at outsources@kgnu.org. Outsources is looking for new members. So if you want to be a part of creating homegrown queer radio at KGNU, please reach out. Outsources is Colorado's only weekly on-air radio program dedicated to the LGBTQ community, and we're looking for a new member to join our team and create queer radio content. The Outsources Collective is searching for an independent, committed team member with knowledge of and experience in the queer community. No prior audio recording or editing experience is required, though it is encouraged as right now training is limited. In lifting up queer and LGBTQ voices and perspectives, the Outsources Collective also recognizes that many identities have been and continue to be further marginalized within the LGBT communities. In lifting up queer and LGBTQ voices and perspectives, the Outsources Collective also recognizes that many identities have been and continue to be further marginalized within LGBTQ communities, including trans people, people with disabilities, Indigenous people, people of color, among others. We strive to build a team that shares these values and reflects the multifaceted and diverse identities of our communities. If you are interested in being a part of the Outsources Collective, for more information on how to join, email outsources@kgnu.org. And don't forget to tune in next week for another episode of Outsources, bringing you homegrown queer radio in the state of Colorado.
Palestine remains an unresolved issue. On the next alternative radio, hear Rashid Khalidi on Palestine, a case of settler colonialism. That's alternative radio, Wednesday evenings at 6, right here on Community Radio, KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.